Welcome back to the deep dive. If you've spent any time, thinking about the future of your career, you've probably hit that same wall of anxiety.
Oh, absolutely.
That question of, will AI take my job? Is automation just going to replace us all and shrink the workforce?
It's a completely understandable fear. It really is. But when we look at the history of computing, we find something, well, pretty remarkable.
Okay.
It's not just some vague reassurance that things will be fine. There's actually a mathematically precise pattern that seems to predict how technology, and especially AI, will always create massive new categories of work.
And that is our mission for today. We are taking a deep dive into five distinct waves of computing history to understand what we're calling the 100X pattern.
Right.
This pattern reveals this recurring cycle where every time technology gets dramatically cheaper and more accessible, it just lowers all the economic barriers.
And that unleashes all this previously suppressed demand.
Yeah.
It inevitably leads to an explosion of new kinds of work.
So this is basically Jevons' paradox.
It's a perfect application of it to technology, yes. The paradox is that when you make a resource more efficient, you don't use less of it.
You have to actually use more.
You use more because the cost goes down. And here, the resource is computing power. So if every wave is roughly 100 times larger in unit volume and maybe 10 times cheaper per unit.
Then the demand for the work itself just expands exponentially.
Exactly.
So the ultimate question for you listening right now isn't whether your current tasks will be automated. I mean, they probably will.
Many of them will, yeah.
The real question is, what new categories of work will this current wave of AI unlock for you? So let's trace this incredible history, starting where all the work was economically suppressed.
We have to begin back in the past, around 1970, the era of the mainframe. And to really get the shift, you have to understand the environment back then. Computing was, well, it wasn't just expensive.
No.
It was structurally inaccessible to almost everyone.
We're talking about just extreme barriers to entry. I mean, to get a system up and running, you were looking at a multi-million dollar investment.
Right. A single unit could be over $1 million.
And then another 100 grand a year just in maintenance. Plus, you needed a specialized climate-controlled room. It wasn't a tool, it was infrastructure.
Which meant you needed this priesthood of highly specialized operators and programmers to run it.
So only the giants could afford it.
Only the giants. Fortune 500 companies, massive government agencies, major universities. And our sources confirm just how small this world was. By 1979, there were only about 88,000 mainframes installed worldwide.
Worldwide. Wow.
Yeah.
And the work reflected that scarcity, didn't it? It was all these high-value, generalized tasks.
Batch processing of payroll, massive inventory management, crunching huge scientific calculations. It was all shared, it was scheduled, and it was deeply complex.
But the key insight here isn't the work that was being done.
No, not at all. It's the work that was being suppressed. I mean, think about it.
Okay.
Every regional manufacturer, every mid-sized law firm, every local insurance agency that could have used a computer, they were all doing their work by hand.
All on paper.
That demand for automation, it existed. But that multi-million dollar price tag, it was like a massive economic firewall. The cost completely constrained the capacity of the entire economy to automate.
If you couldn't afford the room and the specialists, your automation capacity was just zero.
Precisely. And that constraint is what made the first 100X shift so seismic.
Okay, so let's leave that cold, climate-controlled data center behind. Let's move to wave two, where computing starts to break out.
It starts moving from being this corporate utility to more of a departmental asset.
This is the mini computer era.
The mini computer era,
Yep.
yeah. Starting in the late 60s, booming in the 70s, pioneered by companies like Digital Equipment Corporation, DEC.
Yeah.
They just fundamentally changed the equation.
And the price drop was staggering.
Oh, it was huge. We went from million-dollar systems down to units costing somewhere between, say, $18,000 and $100,000.
And crucially, they were desk-sized, not room-sized. They could just sit in a normal office.
And that opened the door. Not just to mid-sized companies, but maybe more importantly, to departments within the big organizations.
Ah, so an R&D team could get their own.
Exactly. R&D teams, engineering groups, hospitals.
Yeah.
They could suddenly justify their own dedicated computing power, totally independent of the corporate IT priesthood.
Okay, but hold on. The sources say 81,000 mini computers were sold in 1979. That sounds huge. I can hear the fear now. Didn't those just replace thousands of mainframe operators and bookkeepers? Where's the job creation there?
Well, that's where the nature of the work expanded. Many computers served entirely new use cases because they were cheap enough to be dedicated to a single purpose.
So not just payroll anymore.
Not just batch payroll, no. They were handling real-time process control in manufacturing plants, automating assembly lines. They enabled dedicated scientific instruments in labs.
And those functions needed new human oversight.
They did, creating roles like the process control engineer, a job that was just economically impossible in the mainframe world. The goal wasn't just efficiency anymore. It was about expanding your capability.
I find that shift fascinating. That an R&D team could suddenly be independent from corporate IT?
It must have changed the whole culture of product development.
Yeah.
Sped everything up. But if the mini computer made the department powerful, the next wave, that was all about making the individual worker an economic powerhouse.
Wave 3, the personal computer revolution.
The PC.
Dominating the 80s and 90s, bringing the computing power of a whole department right down onto your desk. The economics just continued that 100x pattern.
The price point kept dropping. It went from maybe $10,000 early on down to around $2,000 for a powerful machine by the end of the decade. No specialists, no dedicated room. You just plugged it in.
Which made it accessible to individual knowledge workers, small businesses, and, you know, eventually every household.
And the numbers just underscore the scale of this. By 1984, for the very first time in history, PC sales at $11.6 billion actually exceeded the revenue from mainframes.
Wow.
Unit volume hit millions every year, a clear 100x jump for mini computers.
And this is where we see those really visceral job shifts. I mean, yes, tasks were automated, the secretarial typing pool.
It shrank dramatically. And manual bookkeepers who spent days balancing ledgers, they were replaced by spreadsheets. Draftsmen with T-squares were replaced by CAD operators.
But the reduction in cognitive load was immense. Suddenly, one spreadsheet analyst could model 20 financial scenarios in the time it took a manual bookkeeper to run one.
That new capacity didn't reduce the work. It changed the expectation of work.
Right.
We moved from just recording transactions to strategic planning and modeling. And this massive new capacity created new roles. Desktop publishing specialists, financial analysts, software support, and the entire multi-billion dollar video game industry.
It was about giving the individual worker Fortune 500 level productivity tools.
And the net effect was an explosive growth in knowledge work employment.
Which brings us to wave 4, which really, really accelerated that accessibility curve.
The cloud. And software as a service or SaaS all through the 2000s and 2010s.
This was the 100x leap in what? Accessibility? Distribution?
All of it. Before, buying sophisticated software meant a huge upfront license fee, complex installation, and needing your own IT staff to maintain it. Cloud and SaaS just eliminated all that friction.
So instead, you installed nothing. You accessed it all through a web browser, and you paid a simple subscription.
$50 to $500 a month. Mm. That zero upfront cost, zero maintenance model was, well, it was the true democratization of the 21st century.
It threw the digital doors open to absolutely any business anywhere in the world.
The solo consultant, the local plumber, the neighborhood barbershop. They could suddenly afford and use tools that rival the complexity of what a Fortune 500 company had in the 70s.
There's that great anecdote in the sources.
Oh, yeah. That powerful accounting software went from being exclusive to a huge corporation to being available to literally every barbershop in the world.
And this wave created the infrastructure for modern global commerce. The whole gig economy became possible because a single person could instantly access sophisticated CRM, marketing automation, everything.
With no servers, no physical software. And we have the most compelling proof of Jevons' paradox right here. Everyone was worried that easy cloud software would eliminate highly paid IT jobs.
But the opposite happened.
The complete opposite. U.S. employment data for the software industry.
Yeah.
It grew from about 1.5 million people in 1990 to 4.5 million in 2020.
Wow.
Making software cheaper and more accessible tripled the total employment in the field because it exploded the number of businesses.
Right.
The barbershops, the consultants that now needed that capability.
So the 100x pattern holds. The scope of work just expands to fill the new capacity, which brings us inevitably to today, wave 5.
Wave 5. AI agents. And this is the next 100x leap.
Yeah.
The economics of this shift are almost unbelievable compared to everything that came before.
We're moving from paying dollars per hour for skilled human labor, a copywriter, a junior lawyer, whatever.
To paying literal pennies per task.
Pennies per task. For instant, infinitely scalable deployment through an API.
That phrase, pennies per task, that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer about whether you can afford the hardware or the staff or the software license or even the subscription.
It's about the marginal cost of execution approaching zero.
Right.
So let's ground this for a second. What does this mean for, say, a small 10-person company that could never hire a full legal team?
That small company suddenly acquires Fortune 500 capability. In the past, they couldn't run 50 different highly targeted ad campaigns because the human labor was just too expensive.
But now?
Now an AI agent can design and manage those 50 campaigns instantly for maybe $50. The work that needed a $5 million budget in 2010.
Like comprehensive contract review.
Or building custom internal software tools that might soon require a $50,000 budget.
And that's why the true scope of the new work is still a mystery. All the experiments we never ran, all the features we never built, every customer segment we didn't serve because the ROI just wasn't there.
All of that suppressed demand is about to be revealed. We're going to start expecting AI to do things we didn't even know we could ask for.
Just like that barbershop owner in 1970 couldn't have predicted needing QuickBooks.
Exactly. Or the knowledge worker in 1985 couldn't have imagined needing a global cloud strategy. We can't fully predict the new work. The capability has to exist before the demand reveals itself.
So if the pattern holds, the job titles change, but the scope of what humans try to do just expands dramatically.
It always has. We saw with process control engineers and millions of knowledge workers, the work shifts away from execution and more toward orchestration and vision.
And that brings us to the uncomfortable truth that defines Wave 5.
Mm-hmm.
If AI handles the execution at near zero cost, what then becomes the critical, valuable human contribution?
Which leads to the ultimate question of scarcity. When one thing becomes abundant, a new human skill becomes the bottleneck.
Let's just trace that scarcity shift one more time because it's so vital for understanding your own professional future.
Okay, so wave one. When computing power finally became abundant with mainframes, the scarce resource was programming skill.
The ability to tell the million-dollar machine what to do.
Then wave three. When personal computing became abundant, the scarce resource became computer literacy.
You had to be able to operate the spreadsheet, troubleshoot the system.
And most recently, wave four. When software became abundant through the cloud, the scarcity shifted to digital strategy.
The wisdom to know which tools to use, how to integrate them, and how to define a plan.
So now for the critical final question. When raw intelligence, the ability to process, execute, and generate, becomes abundant through AI, what becomes the new valuable scarcity?
What's left for us?
The sources are very clear on this. It's no longer the execution of intelligence that matters. It's all the human resources that surround it. The new scarce resources are wisdom, judgment, context, and relationships.
Things AI can't do.
It can't assess risk, navigate office politics, build trust with a client, or have true life experience to inform choices.
But the sources say the single most crucial scarcity is the ability to figure out what problems are worth solving.
That's it. AI solves problems instantly, but a human has to define the mission. You need the judgment to allocate that now infinite execution capacity toward the most valuable, most human-centric goal.
So that changes the frame completely. It's not what existing job survives, it's what value shifts to.
The 100X pattern shows the scope of work always expands. We won't be doing the same work with fewer people. We'll be doing 10X or 100X more work with the same number of people just because the old barriers are gone.
The expectation of human work just moves up the stack. If the old bottleneck human intelligence for tedious execution is solved by AI, the new bottleneck becomes human judgment.
Human wisdom in setting the direction and assessing the risk. That is a skill you have to master to thrive in this new wave of abundance.
So the final question for you is, what problems are you going to choose to solve now that the execution is free? That is the job of the future.